This is the G Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. This is the G Podcast, and today we got a special guest. We got Larry, the Modified Gentleman, in the building, and we getting right to it. Yes, indeed. One more time, y'all. This is the G Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. This is the G Pod. Larry, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me on here, man. Nothing. I know what you got going on.
No doubt. So this conversation, it's going to be a good one. But before we dive in, I know we're going to jump around a little bit. Just tell me, what is the Modified Gentleman? What does that mean?
Okay. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Larry Jackson, and I am the creator of the Modified Gentleman, which is basically a transformational coaching program that's aimed at masculine wellness. Now, when I talk about masculine wellness, it's about helping men to define what masculinity is to them. And I do that by helping guys with tips, tools, tactics, strategies to help them overcome challenges or find some type of understanding with something that's giving them issues, problems, or some type of obstacle. Mm. But yeah, that's the Modified Gentleman.
Okay. And you said masculine. How'd you word it? You said masculine wellness.
Masculine wellness.
It's a strange combination of words. I hear those terms brought together so often. They don't really care too much about how we feel, in my opinion. So we'll learn a little bit more. Yeah. So I guess talk to me about, like, where are you originally from? Where do you call home?
At the moment, I live in North Carolina. I live in Burlington, North Carolina, but I'm originally from Florence, South Carolina. And I've traveled a lot. I've been 10 years in the military. So I've traveled a little bit, been on a couple of deployments, been around the world, seen a few things, talked to a few people. So
are you like born and raised in Florence, South Carolina?
Yeah. Born and raised in Florence, South Carolina.
So I'm not too familiar with Florence, but just how would you describe growing up there? Was it enjoyable? Were you a place where you couldn't wait to leave? Just what was that like growing up in a town like Florence?
Growing up in the 80s. So I'm 41 at the time of this recording. So I would say, like, back in the 80s and 90s, man, it was just country. We talking about cotton fields, tobacco fields, things like that. It was straight country. But going back now, it's huge. It's a lot more city now. It's definitely a lot more going on. A lot more money has been funneled into the city to clean it up and expand and grow. So it's been fun, because when I was in the military, I left in like 2005. And I visited a few times back in between them. But when I got out of the military and really went back to stay for a little bit, I would say around 2015, 17-ish. Like, I just saw how much everything grew. Places that I grew up that were empty fields were now apartment complexes, shopping malls, just all kinds of industry growing up over there. Definitely.
Word. Yeah. And so you born and raised in Florence, and did you go straight from high school to the military, or what did you do once you finished grade school?
Oh, that's a good question too. So once I got out of high school, I didn't go to college. I didn't go straight to the military. I just kind of floated around a little bit to kind of find out, you know, what I wanted to do. I didn't have a plan. And that's another part that plays into the Modified Gentleman, because I ended up having my first child when I was 23, and I was working three dead-end jobs, three of them at the same time. I'm talking about getting up at like 3 a.m, working all day until like 11 or 12 at night to get off, just to go to sleep and do it all over again. And so my first child was on the way. I realized I needed to fix this. I needed to get out of here. But personally, I thought I had outgrown my environment. I needed to get out of there. I needed to try something bigger, see something bigger. And the best way to do that, the quickest way I could do that, to also take care of my child and work, joining the military. So I got in and I was able to do everything that I needed to do and take care of a lot of things. Took care of my kids. I was able to travel, save some money, and just overall get more of a better outlook outside of my town, you know? Yeah, and that plays a huge part.
No question. That, yeah. You know, a couple of things to unpack there, because as a black man growing up, the idea of a military career can, you know, you hear polarizing thoughts on that. Some people are definitely like, it's a great opportunity. Some people are like, that's no place for a black man, et cetera. But what I will say, at least in my experience and growing up, friends, family, et cetera, if you are especially a young black male, and you really don't have a clue of what is going to be next and how you can like professionalize yourself and really start to build something more than what you described in terms of like these dead end situations, these dead end jobs that don't really offer us opportunities. I think that the military is an awesome route for young black males to go who haven't figured anything else out for themselves, in my opinion. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Because if you're coming from a small town, you don't have many options in that town as far as the environment itself. For me, it was either, you know, jail, prison, grave, or just continuously working something unfulfilling. Nowadays, of course, there's a lot more options nowadays, especially in the online space, in the digital world, things like that. But as far if you want to be a person that really gets out there in the community and in the environment and you're a good person face to face, like you have to grow. You can't sit behind your computer and be in the house all day. Like you lose your mind. Definitely. So I was able to get out and try to see another world out there.
Word. And you also mentioned you had your first child at 23. I'm assuming this was a not planned situation. This was like unexpected when it happened, right? That's one of the pillars of like your platform, not having unexpected kids, but fatherhood, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So let's talk about this idea of fatherhood, like, because, you know, 23 is pretty young, first kid, and you yourself are trying to figure out who you are. Would you even say you were comfortable as a man yet at that age before becoming a father?
And I'll be honest with you, a lot of that, especially in the black communities and stuff, we have we don't have as many positive examples now as there used to be back in the day. And I'm talking about positive male figures in our communities to become those pillars that says, hey, you know, a positive man, you know, is a good guidance counselor. He's a mentor. He shows good leadership. A lot of us don't have that in our communities. And so a lot of things we do is trial and error. And we do things until we get it right, or we just do it until we give up, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a struggle. And seeing that with my first kid on the way and knowing that I wanted to be a good father. I wanted to be the father that I didn't have. And so that plays into the part of the modified gentleman as well. Mm-hmm. So let me say something real quick. So when you think about the modified gentleman, it's not just a title. It's also a goal to attain. Like the modified gentleman, in short, is a man that possesses range of character and personality, constantly growing, constantly learning, expanding himself. He's not one-dimensional. He's multidimensional. He's not a dull blade. He's refined. There's things about him that he learns, he grows and expands on constantly. And that's why I outgrew my environment and had to get
modified gentlemen sound like G to me, I have to say, but but no, I feel you. Like 23 and that sort of finding out that you're about to be a father at 23 just ignited a different sort of flame. And so like what were some of those initial, I don't know if fears are the right word, but just like those initial feelings that when you realize, oh, I really don't have my together and I'm about to be a father. You know what I'm saying? Like, just can you walk me through what that initial just processing was like for yourself?
Oh yeah, 100%. Because the thing is that I already knew that I was working in a dead end situation before my child was on the way. So I was always sitting there figuring out, how am I going to get out of this thing? How am I going to get out of this thing? You know, how am I going to do better? And I'm talking about back in the day, we used to just hustle stuff all the time, you know, because there wasn't like, say back in the early 2000s, you wasn't going to just get online and create a Shopify store and be like a millionaire. It was none of that type of stuff. So we're talking about hustling things, 9 to 5, doing jobs here and there, whatever the case may be. So there was always this this a little bit of fear that was there, worried about tomorrow. And then once you get to a point where now you're a provider, you really have to step up. Before that, you were constantly in a survival mode, constantly in a survival state. Now you can't be a provider and still stuck in a survival state. You have to move to the next phase to where, okay, I want to get to a point where I'm thriving. I want to get to a point where I can take care of my responsibilities and not worry about the lights getting cut off, the heat being cut off, the water being cut off. You know what I mean?
And and at that time period, the
and healthcare too,
for sure, for sure.
the mother
of your first child, right? Like, to make a decision to say, you know what, I'm about to go apply for the military. It was the Army, correct? So, to make that decision, were you a single father at the time? Were you married at that time, or like I'm curious?
No, we were not married at the time. We weren't married at the time. But she fully understand also, you know, we kind of both had the same situation. Well, not fully the same. She was in college at the time. And I was just a dude out there trying to do his best. But my best wasn't enough. And I knew that. And so I knew I had to step it up. And so she understood my decision too. And we had to talk about it. And we were like, hey, I think this is the best thing that we can do, that I can do, that could help us, type of thing.
And did you get like hit with a recruiter, or did you yourself think, I think that's my next move? Like, what made that light bulb go off? Like, that's a possibility for me.
So, okay. The thing is, like, I tried to get into the military before, in like 2001, fresh out of high school. Well, I got out of high school in 2000, and I went in 2001 because I wasn't doing anything, still working dead end stuff. And I went through the entire process, got all the way up to where I had to sign the last papers. And I was like, nah, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. Because that was around the time right before, like, when the war was starting to kick off. Like, 2001?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I was like, nah, I'm good. But still, like, waiting that time out and just trying to still continuously figure things out. Then I went back in 2005. And I was like, yeah, I gotta do this.
In retrospect, if you could have went back and told young Larry, who at the time is a crazy situation, 9/11 is taking place, like, it's a whole new era now when it comes to military post 9/11. If you could go back and talk to young Larry, would you say, man, yo, you probably should have went ahead and went? Or would you say, Larry, you made a good decision on holding off a couple of years?
I would say you made a good decision.
And why so?
If I would have joined the military in 2001, my life would have been completely different right now. I probably wouldn't have had my daughter like years later. My daughter was born in 2005. So a lot of things probably would have been completely different. But I'm one of those guys that say, you know, if you could go back and make any changes, would you make changes? No, I would never make any changes. I can't.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, it would change who I am.
We definitely can't, but we will make different decisions in the future. That is one thing we will do.
Hey, I don't want to make changes. I want to make do. And doing things I'm doing right now and knowing who I am, the struggles I've been through, the people I've helped, people I've hurt, all that is what makes you who you are, man. Yeah. I don't want to go back and be like, oh yeah, I wish I could have did this and wish I could have did that differently. I can respect that.
And you spent a total of 10 years in the Army. That's not a short amount of time. And so
it's halfway to retirement.
So it leads me to a couple of questions, because I have family who've been in the military, retired military. And I do ask people, especially those who have the double digit years and at a young age, you're looking at, you know, what, 25, 30, you're looking at early retirement at 45, potentially.
Oh yeah.
Why not go the full retirement route and just do the 10 years? Why was that the case?
Well, for me, I think it became more personal because I had more children along the way. I have a total of 5 kids. I have 2 girls and 3 boys. But when I had gotten to the military, that's when deployments were kind of still in rotation heavy. And I just kind of got tired, man, of trying to raise my kids through Skype and through Zoom, because I would be gone. Like, my first deployment was 15 months straight. I still had a newborn and I was gone for 15 months. And so, and a total, I had 3 deployments, which could have been 4.
Where were you deployed? If you don't mind sharing.
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. I did Iraq twice, Afghanistan once, but it could have been
15 months. And what were the other deployments?
So I did a 15 month. I did a 10 month and a 9
Wow. Okay.
Technically over I had on my paperwork, I had 36 months of deployment time. That's 3 years.
It's like 30% of the entire time.
I've been in for 10. Yeah. So out of 10 years, I did 3 of that in another country.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest, that's really not much compared to other soldiers and military personnel that I know who have deployed like 6-7 times. Like, it's just like, I'm not even complaining because I know there are people who have been out there in the trenches like a lot for a long time, and they're trying to make do with what they got too.
For sure. And so you feel like the element of being a father, wanting to be closer to family, was one of the main, if not the main, reasons why you said you went and did something else after the 10 years?
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to get out of it, man, and just kind of settle down and stop moving around so much.
What do you feel like were, I guess, some of the more valuable things you picked up being in the military, things that help you to this day?
Oh, yeah. The best part about that is you get more exposure. And when I mean exposure, I'm talking about to everything, because you go all over the world, you see so many different people. I've been to places where English is like the third or fourth language down, you know, like they don't even think about stuff in English. They don't speak English. I've been to places like, my last name is Jackson. I've been to places where some people have only heard of Michael Jackson, and they asked me if I was related to him, just because, you know, that's the second time. I'm the second person they've ever heard last name Jackson. But a lot of what I've gotten out of it, man, is just more seeing different sides of humanity, man, you know, because I got a chance to go and help people that were really struggling. I got a chance to, you know, see how things work on different borders, you know, outside of the U.S., because sometimes a lot of people think United States is just an island by itself, and they have no clue how things work in another country.
Yeah.
You know, like we're talking about going someplace where you jump in a truck and it's kilometers.
right.
You know,
right. Just everything is Celsius, no more Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. We talk about the imperial system differences.
The leaders versus the courts, all that stuff. Yeah. You know what messed me up when I went overseas, man? I was in school, and instead of decimals, they was writing with commas instead of decimals. I'm up here thinking it's 1,003 and it's 1.003. Like I was completely thrown off. Thrown off.
Yeah. Exactly. But it's stuff like that, though. I think that gives you more range of character and personality.
1,000%. And so having spent like a nice chunk of your adulthood, you went into the military not quite, you know, understanding what you wanted to do, or even, you know, walking into like your actual manhood. Do you feel like you became a man while in that 10-year span in the military?
No, I feel like, so when I went into the military, I had a short-term goal, and the short-term goal was to take care of my family. I didn't have a long-term goal. I didn't know what I was going in, you know, for down the road. I re-enlisted twice while I was in the military. My first 3 years, my second 3 years. And then when I got to my 10th, it would have been, hey, you in it now or you out type of thing. I was at the halfway point. And then that's when I got out. But I learned a lot being in the military, a lot of bad things, a lot of good things. I met a lot of good people, met a lot of bad people. But one of the things that I learned about that is how to be more understanding. And when I say understanding, it's because there's so many people with so many differences. It is not a blanket. It's not a one size fits all. It's not, you know, well, this is, we're gonna take this one thing and apply it to everything. That doesn't really work in the military, unless you're just talking about service. But people themselves, completely different. So I learned to have a lot of respect and understanding for different people. And I think that was the main thing I took with me when I left the military.
And in terms of like maturing, You feel like that was something that you really didn't, that you lacked before you had that experience?
Now, that's okay. So that's a funny thing. So I got in the military at 23, which actually is old, because the majority of guys that were in there were like 17 and 18. I mean, they had to have waivers from their parents to get in there. So I was already like one of the older heads that was in there, you know, in boot camp. I already had a house, apartment, kid, I was paying my own bills, all that stuff, where some of these kids didn't know how to wash their own clothes. So But I felt like I was at a halfway point in my maturity because I still wasn't at that level where you would think that a man would conduct himself. Mm. I was just at that age where I was like I felt like I was fresh out of college, just partying every weekend. That's what I felt like, you know, and that's kind of how I was doing it because I was a young man, had money in my pocket. I was off, you know, in different states, different cities, different countries at some times. I do feel like there were some points where my maturity level dropped a lot. And a lot of that was because I was in the environment of a lot of immature people too. And you would think that it would go the opposite way. Like, hey, I'm the older guy. Let me tell you guys how to, you know, what's right for X, Y, and Z. But it didn't always go that way. It didn't always go that way.
Yeah, peer pressure and the people around you is a key. I think when you start talking about masculine wellness, the circle, the circle that you have around you is important. And actually, this leads me to think about something that I posted a while ago about there being a friendship recession in the male community. And
ooh, I like
and
that,
that
like
men that. Are suffering because they don't connect with other men and they don't know how to like make friends, basically male friends. They lack male friendships, right?
100%. Yes.
You know, I thought the article was a little overblown in my opinion in terms of, I feel like me personally, if there's something you don't like about your situation, then you change it.
Okay. Yeah. You would think
that's how my brain works. If I don't like my job, if I don't like my social group, if I don't like my home, if I don't like something, I don't have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I can do something different to try and get another outcome. Yeah. And if I really felt like I was lacking, you know, something that was so important, I would take more initiative to create those opportunities. You know, I would put myself out there a lot more in different circles, different groups to fulfill that void. So, you know, I think it's important that we have connections, but the way that the article kind of wrote it, like a friendship recession, is if like can't go out and do something for themselves, is like, I don't know, you know, it's like whose fault is it that the recession is there? Is it anybody else's fault versus who's in the mirror is the way I'm kind of looking at it.
Now, see, I'm going to add to that a little bit. And I think, so one of the things that I teach in my program is self-awareness because everything that I teach in my program is everything that I had to teach myself. So when it comes to self-awareness, and this is where a big chunk of it I learned in the military was learning who the am I? Who is Larry? What am I doing? You know, what do I want to do? And so I talked to a lot of guys and young men and boys, and I said, hey, what type of person do you want to be? What do you care about? What do you love? What do you hate? You know, what's your favorite food? Where do you like to go? What sets you off? What can you tolerate? So many people can't answer those questions for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the big things I talk about internal and external. Internal is you. You got to figure out who you are. So that way, all that external chaos can't shake you because you can't control that. You can't control the outside world. You can't control what's going on outside of your door, but you can sure control how you react to things. So it plays a huge part in learning self-awareness, who you are, man. So many people get triggered because they've never taken the time to work through
1,000%.
You know, you got to be able to get to a point where you work your self-awareness up to the point where you have disarmed those triggers. At least that's how I feel, in my opinion.
No, I agree that, like I always say, that inner child is going to always cry. It's like the things that bothered you as a little kid, they still bother you today. Now, how you process it and how you react, you know, eventually a kid learns he just can't fall out in the store, right? Like, but the feeling that's causing them to fall out in the store, like that feeling is, it probably never really goes away. You just learn to channel it, deal with it, you know, manage it differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the funny thing about life, man, is the fact that life is one big lesson. And if you don't learn that lesson, it's going to be a retest. And it's going to be a constant retest until you learn it. Because that's just like one of those universal laws, man. It's just you're going to constantly keep seeing it until you have learned how to correct it within yourself.
Those patterns. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you go into the army not having, say, like a true skill set that can get you out of a dead end job, but then you spend your 10 years in the army and you make a decision to leave, but you still got to feed a bigger family at this point. So you said, you said in that time span, you went from having one child to how many when you left in 10 years?
Five.
So, okay. So within 10 years, you had a total of five children and then you leave the army. In my head, I'm thinking like, you know, when you talk about providing, now you got even a way more to think about, like what type of opportunities did the army prepare you for afterward? Like you went in not really having that skill set, but then you leave the army as a new professional. What kind of trade or skill did you pick up while you were there?
So I went in as an IT professional. You know, well, I didn't have a background in IT. I just hung out around a lot of people who knew how to build computers and do music. I did music before I got into the military. I used to, one of my jobs were, I was a chief engineer for a recording studio. And that didn't take off, of course. Something happened with the studio. They ended up shutting down, going a separate way. So again, got dead end stuff I need to find. So once I talked to the recruiter, we did the ASVAB test and went through the necessary paperwork and everything. I scored pretty high within the IT field. So I said, screw it. Let me go in there. I just need to go ahead and get in there. And I'm already familiar with it. Now they're just going to formally train me, you know? So I went in. But also, while I was in the military, I got in college and they paid for it, of course. And I continued to grow more as an IT professional. So I ended up getting 2 degrees.
Oh, wow. Dope. And what were those? What did you study?
Oh, so my first degree was in communications. And then my second degree was in information technology in the computer programming.
And you got all...
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't like computers. Facts. I don't like computers. It just comes easy to me. Like learning stuff comes easy to me. You know? But... I jumped into it, ran with it, and was able to work it in my benefit.
This is where I think, you know, people might say, you know, the key is to figure out what your passion is and then follow your passion. But I think the better advice is to figure out what you're actually good at and then figure out how to get passionate about what you're good at, because passion can come and go if we just keeping it a stat, right? Like, fires don't stay lit all the time. Like, you know, the things you're passionate about at 25 versus 29 versus 35 versus these things change. But I do believe that all of us are outliers in some sort of skill. All of us. Like, there's something that we do that's typically better than everybody else. And it sounds like even
God-given
talent. It's like, it just comes easy to me. And so I like you sharing that, because sometimes what we need to do is something we don't necessarily enjoy doing. You feel what I'm saying? Like, having awareness, discipline to say, even though I don't like this, this actually makes the most sense. Yeah. Let me make sure I put things in order to get the most out of this for myself. I think that's pretty dope.
That's having foresight right there. When you can see ahead and be like, I'm gonna push through it right now. I know it sucked, but I'm gonna push through it right now because I have a bigger goal waiting for me at the end. A lot of people don't have that. That's one of the things I try to talk about with guys, is the fact that, hey, where do you see yourself now? What type of man do you want to become? And then where do you see yourself down the road? You know, like, you got it. What's your 3-year plan? What's your 5-year plan? What's your 10-year plan? Like, I know this sound like cliche questions, but nah, they actually got some real meaning to them. Like, they really cause you to sit and think about, okay, how are you going to take this, you know, seriously? Like, what's your plan? You know, it's not just we're not just winging this thing no more.
Right. You know? Yeah. I've said something. It's like, as a young person, and I relate to that, because as a young person, I didn't necessarily have plans. I didn't plan to go to college. I just, when my friends started applying, I was like, this is what I'm apply to. And I happened to get into one school. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? I didn't plan to go there. Yeah. I just happened to get in. When I got to school, I didn't plan for what I was going to do after school. I was just like, I guess I should try and graduate. I wasn't thinking ahead. I was just moving around. Similar to your experience, it really wasn't until I was already married and probably in my in my younger 30s where I realized things go right when I'm intentional about what I'm doing and why, and versus when I just go with whatever is being done without having a real sense of intent behind what I'm doing, having a real purpose behind what I'm doing. Like, and so I changed that for myself to where, you know, I once I realized that, I started moving super intentionally with everything. Like, I don't just do things just because, like, I know why I'm doing this, and I'm working towards something, whether people see it or can recognize it, or whether you're just completely blind to it. I know I have a vision that I'm working toward. You feel what I'm saying?
That's dope, though. That's powerful, man. That's powerful. So that plays into a huge part when I talk about masculine wellness, where I try to give a lot of guys direction into being intentional about their actions. And so when I talk about, you know, what is masculinity, like, that's really a hard thing to define in words, but I could define it as masculinity is an energy that a man uses to express himself through his words, through his actions, his habits, his behaviors, how he moves and conducts himself. So when I help guys try to define that for themselves, because I can't tell you how to be a man. That's not my job. That's not another man's job. A man cannot tell another man how to be a man. He can give you the tools, the tips, tactics, the strategies. He can give you that knowledge, and you got to decide for yourself the caliber of man you want to be. And so that's where I talk about masculinity and trying to help men define what that looks like for them. So you can decide. You can have that ultimate final decision. It's going to be yours anyway. You might as well figure out what you're getting yourself into. You know, you just need to decide if you're going to be more positive instead of negative.
Yeah, I like how you said that. Is you get to, that's like, that to me is the free will of it all. You can choose to be positive or you can choose to be the opposite. That's really up to you how you choose to use your powers.
Yeah, it's like look, if you see me as a good example, I'm gonna try to teach you what I know. But if you still decide to go and do something opposite, that was your choice. I still gave you the necessary tools to try to be better. And that's what I want to help.
Word. So, like, I know a big piece of the program is three pillars: manhood, fatherhood, and husbandhood. And so like, from a fatherhood perspective, like, we kind of talked about just the first child, and that kind of led you to figuring out that you need to do something. So it leads you to the army.
I had to make some
action. I had to take action.
Yeah.
And the fatherhood came before the manhood, right? So, like, how would you define manhood? Like what makes a man versus a boy, like, in your opinion?
Ooh. All right, so check this out. In my opinion, because I know a lot of people have different opinions, I believe what separates a boy from manhood is when he realizes his responsibilities. And then once he realizes that, and how he depends on attacking those responsibilities or handling those responsibilities, that would also define the type of man he's going to become. Because I know grown men who have huge responsibilities, but they don't take care of them. And so that lessens your stock, that lessens your value. You know, because people don't look at you if you're reliable or not. You know, do you have integrity? Are you honest? Like, if you don't take care of your responsibilities, then the manner in which you do that will start to become your identity. And so I think that separates the man and the boy. Because if you look back in the hundreds of years ago, 8-year-olds used to build houses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no joke. They chop wood and build houses. You feel me? They took care of family. Like, they would go hunting.
Their parents had them kids just to put them to work. They had 15, 14 kids. Right. They was going to put all of them to work. No question.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not equating, you know, hard labor, child labor to masculinity. I'm just specifically speaking on the level of responsibility. Mm-hmm. Like, they knew that, hey, if we don't go hunting, the family's not going to eat tonight. And so it's a lot of older men that they have not made that connection of, oh, I need to step into my responsibility. And that
oftentimes will require sacrifices to the point that you make, like,
yes,
responsibilities aren't comfortable. You know, sacrifices will have to be made.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, man. I try to help these guys take a look at that. So again, they can see it and they can define, okay, how do I move in this? How do I conduct myself in this? You know, because there's never going to be a perfect answer, but there may be options. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the way you frame that. Never really a perfect answer, but there's always options to consider. And like, that, the idea of being a man, like, it was something that I didn't think about until down the line, because, you know, I got married in my 20s, still not a father. I did realize at a certain point in my marriage that I'm still a boy. Like, it was a moment, and the moment was in large part because I realized I wasn't in position to to take care of something that was a mistake of mine. Like, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. It was a bad mistake, and it cost the household. and it put me in a position where I realized like how much of a boy I was at the time, where I was like, okay,
right,
this can't happen anymore. Yep. Like I thought I was doing okay, but then when
I was taking care of business,
but then when it hit the fan, I realized I ain't have no business taking care of. Like, I really I didn't have none of the essentials. And so I changed a lot of things from that moment to put myself in position to really make sure that the household would always be okay, regardless of what happened to myself. Right. I agree, man. Like that, I don't know. It's like a light bulb moment that happened for me, and I didn't anticipate it. I didn't plan for it, but when it happened, it was just undeniable. It was like, okay, you got a man up now.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the biggest factors right there to let you know where you stand. You know, if somebody puts some real responsibility on your shoulders, and if you can carry it or not, you know, if you can choose to handle it or not, or if you drop it.
And that goes for man to man relationships too. Like you, when things hit the fan, you think homie is really your man's, and then all of a sudden you see that the folks you thought you were lining up with are boys. You're like, oh man, I thought the team was stronger than this. Like, and then you start seeing folks quiver into their you know, adolescent ways. So it's across the board, and like, to me, all dynamics, not just like as a, you know, a partner or a husband, but man, just in terms of how you show up, whether it be work, relationship, friends, family, it don't matter. Like, it's just how you show up across the board.
Exactly. Across the board. And that's what I talk about, man, trying to find where your identity is throughout self-awareness, you know, because regardless, let's say you do have a friend group that, you know, they're a little more on the immature side, but you know who you are. You know how to tolerate them before it starts affecting you. You know how to step back and be like, all right, guys, I'm gonna holler at y'all later. You know, if all they want to do is party, smoke, drink, and go out all the time, you know, you got to limit that because you got a family at the house. You know, you got bills to pay. You can't go out there and spend all this money or be going all the time. This is you stepping into your responsibilities. Like, all right, I'll holler at y'all later. And you got to be okay with saying that and not feeling guilty. You got to be okay with saying that and going to really take care of your responsibilities. You know, you don't have to accommodate somebody else's feelings, and you don't have to sacrifice yours in the process.
1,000%. Yeah. I like the way you worded that. And then this idea of manhood, we talked about 100 years ago, 8-year-olds building houses. Today, 8-year-olds.
It was probably older than that. It probably wasn't even 100. Maybe like 200.
I mean, honestly, like when I think back, like, okay, so I don't think, even if we're talking early 1900s, like, this is before public schools. Yeah. This is back when, like, when you were born, you probably lived on some land. The family had a farm. Like, you had to work to provide. Yeah, like,
you was pulling your weight.
And in today's world, young men don't really get raised to pull weight, in my opinion.
Well, there's a reason for that. Well, okay. I won't say there's a reason, but I have a theory for that. And the theory is the fact that men no longer have a rite of passage. There is nothing that says, okay, you've crossed this threshold now, and you have gotten to a level of maturity or a level of perceived manhood that society is comfortable with. Because nowadays it's hard now to tell the difference between where a son starts and a father ends. And what I mean by that is you can have two men, you can have a son and a father in the same room together, and it's hard to tell them apart. Dad loves Marvel movies and wears t-shirts and comic books and plays video games all day. And that's the same thing his 16-year-old son doing. Now, I'm not saying that is a bad thing. I'm saying it shouldn't become your identity. That's what I'm saying. You know, some people shouldn't look at you and be like, oh, well, all he does is stay in the house all day. He doesn't do anything productive type of thing. Now, there could be so many more factors to it, whatever the case may be. I'm just saying, like, men are missing something nowadays that causes them to step across that threshold to say, hey, you know, I am going to be a man that has range of character and personality and want to be productive.
Do you think there was a rite of passage that existed in the past? Like, you said we don't have one now. Do you feel like there used to be something that was this, like, you're now a man sort of rite of passage? I know they have what they call bar mitzvahs in the Jewish community.
But that's by culturally age appropriate, though. It doesn't really say that, you know, you're stepping into a mature role. And I don't think that we never had something significantly stated, like this is what men should do or this is how men should conduct themselves. But this is the part hard to do, but it could be easy to fix. And so more men need to learn about themselves, how to step into a more positive role so in turn, they can teach their sons and then they can continuously grow and learn and mature and not get to a point where they're 40s and 50s and still trying to figure themselves mm-hmm. out. And so this is where my whole program, I try to get into. So my program starts with masculine development. You finding out, you know, what's your thought process towards masculinity, you know, past, present, and future? How did you see masculinity in the past? How were you first exposed to it? Through a father figure, through an uncle, an older brother, a pastor, whatever the case may be, because you were not a man, but how did you see other mm-hmm. men act type of thing? You know, how do you see yourself in the present as a man? What type of man do you want to be in the future? So these are a lot of important questions that need to be asked across the board, because where are they being asked? Mm-hmm. Nowhere. Like, who's asking these questions? And another thing too is that I don't teach from a biblical standpoint, and that's just by choice, because you can get a lot of biblical principles that'll teach you how to move through masculinity now, but not everybody goes that route. And that's fair and that's valid. And so I try to help guys understand, okay, through masculine development, like what type of man do you want to be? And so it kind of gets rid of the rite of passage, and instead you continuously grow, mm-hmm. you know? So you can get to 60, 70 years old and you're still learning as a man, but you're already being productive as a man, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And because like it's especially in today's world, the, you know, being a man, you know, mm-hmm. even saying that is arguably controversial or arguably.
Oh, man. The most controversial one I hear is a real man. What's right. a real man?
Yeah. And so it's like, I think it's an interesting thing to discuss, because we have that perception, and then we talk about this idea of being mature, being providers and all this stuff. Like in the modern mm-hmm. world compared to the past, I guess my question is, when it comes to masculinity, like what do you think is really defining that for like on a more cultural basis, right? Like what do you think is really driving that for, you know, the broader scope of men?
You mean like currently?
Or yeah, well, we like currently, what's really shaping the expectations of masculinity in your opinion?
So that's tough, man, because masculinity is different across different cultural mm-hmm. backgrounds, right? And it's been skewed. I think one of the issues we're dealing with right now is, you know, toxic masculinity, because there's a lot of things that has gotten into it and corrupted it, you know? And some people will argue and say, hey, there's no such thing as toxic masculinity. But I don't believe in that, because masculinity itself is still good. It's not, people think it's inherently a positive energy, which it is, but you can still have things that can get into it, infect it, and corrupt it. And that's where you get toxic.
No question.
But on a scale, like the things that are driving masculinity nowadays is, it's a lot of dangerous things out there, man. And I think the problem with that is the level of, we have so many people who are, they're physically old, but they're not, they're mentally young, mm-hmm. you know? I get on social media all the time, man, and I just get disgusted. Like, you know, it's just people out there just doing things that are not productive to society, or it's not productive to themselves.
It's almost an example, you know? Like when you talk about the idea of what we call toxic masculinity,
yeah,
that's been normalized, in my opinion, from, you know, the culture, the music, whether mm-hmm. it be the influences of Future, Drake, you know, 21 yeah. Savage,
yeah.
They make this music and we embrace it as the toxic raps. Like it's the, you know, it's toxic.
I mean, it ain't far off.
And I'm not questioning the quality of the music itself, but just like in anything else, as I grew up, I emulated the music I listened to. You know, I tried to present myself the way I looked at artists on TV, and I tried to socialize myself the way I heard in music, right? Like, and so I think that's true of all generations. And I think for our current generation, it's a huge emphasis in the content on like this, like super, like this, this toxic approach and normalizing that. Yeah.
It's dangerous in our culture. I'm not even gonna lie to you. It's dangerous in our culture, because because like you said, we normalize it. You know, we kind of celebrate the things that are detrimental mm-hmm. to us. So I want to do my part to combat that as well, but doing it from a more foundation standpoint. I'm not just saying, oh, don't ever listen to rap music. But the thing is, a lot of people don't have discernment. They don't have good judgment skills. They don't have good decision-making skills. And so they'll listen to that stuff and they'll go right with
right.
it. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And so...
But that's the thing about the self-awareness I was talking about, you know, having that internal...
1,000%. 1,000%. And like we... So we talk about like this toxic, this idea of toxic masculinity. A big sort of the way that's framed is this idea of like a womanizer, somebody who doesn't have a lot of respect yeah. for women, multiple partners,
yeah.
all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like one of your other pillars is what we call, you said husbandhood. And so like yeah. that tells me that you do believe in the institution of marriage. Like you think that's a beneficial tool versus something that folks should stay away from. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. So let me back up a little bit here. So I think that for a man to understand himself more, he has to have a set of core principles. And in my program, I developed four principles mm-hmm. that we talk about: your values, your standards, your boundaries, and your beliefs. Those four values, those four principles, you need to focus on and find out, what does that mean to you? What do you value? What do you find worthwhile? What's worth anything to you? You know, what are your standards? What is the level of something you need something to do at? What is the level that you want to perform at? What is the level you expect somebody else to perform at? You know, and what are your boundaries? What are you allowing yourself to tolerate
mm-hmm.
before you get triggered, before you wild out, before you go off? What is your boundaries that you can tell somebody, nah, I'm good, I'm gonna walk away from mm-hmm. that, you know? And what do you believe in? What is your belief system? Do you believe in having a good family? Do you believe in being a good person? Those things like that. Do you believe in integrity? Like what is all that wrap up to you? So you have those core principles. Then once you start getting an idea of your core principles that defines your personality and your character, now you move those over to your area of application. That's what I call having those three pillars of you apply those core principles to husbandhood, manhood, fatherhood, you know, because I believe those are areas that every man should learn how to build, learn how to focus, learn how to manage, because that's life. Those are the areas of life where you're expected to show up at. Now, you don't have to have kids to start getting in the mind frame of fatherhood. Matter of fact, you should start learning, okay, what type of father do I want to be before I have my child, before my child gets here? Because I didn't know that. I had a child and then it was like, okay, how do I be a father? Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? And then you apply that to marriage. Like you shouldn't have to get married to start thinking about how to be mm-hmm. a husband. What type of husband do you want to be? Let's start thinking about that before you get married. And then manhood is constantly, that never stops, defining yourself as a man. Some people will argue, okay, where does spirituality fit into that? Where does religion and faith fit into that? I would put that also in the category of manhood, because believe it or not, your faith, your spirituality, and your religion is still your choice. And it's still up for you to know who you are, to decide to move or walk within a certain faith or a certain religion, you know? So those three areas of application: manhood, husbandhood, fatherhood. Take your core principles, and that's where you apply them to your life.
That makes sense. I'm following what you're saying, man. And I mean, like, I think marriage is a, you know, it's like when you talk about masculinity, positive, negative, at the end of the day, a fire can heat up a house or it can burn it down, right?
Yes.
That is true with every tool in the toolbox. Like, we can use tools mm-hmm. to be impactful, to build, or we can use tools to tear things down and destroy.
100%, bro.
I'm with you on that level. Yeah. It's like, at the end of the day, you know, we have to make a decision, a conscious decision, an intentional decision to use ourselves in a positive way. Because when you aren't intentional, you often get swept up in negativity. That's if you don't have those boundaries, man, and all that stuff. Yeah,
earlier.
Exactly. It's kind of coming full circle. Yeah. If you don't have those boundaries and those things in place, and you're just wandering, you're going to get swept up in some negativity very easily.
Yeah. So my program, man, it's like in five areas. So the first part is masculine development. The second part is self-awareness. The third part is talking about core principles. The fourth part is the areas of application. And the fifth part is the prosperity phase. That's where you take everything you've learned. You learn how to maintain it and you expand on it, meaning you can teach the next person, you know, you become prosperous. And that's now everybody can start learning and thriving. Like it's the village concept, mm-hmm. you know, let's build one person by person, and that person can go out and still learn and explore and expand and help the next person. So now we're talking about a modified gentleman's community. So you were earlier talking about friendships and things like that. That's how mm-hmm. we build that. Everybody's on the same page about being a better man and how to expand and be prosperous and thrive. That's how you do it. You know?
No, I agree. And you mentioned, I mean, we've been talking about the program, but like if somebody listening wanted to get more information or get in contact with you to get more resources related to the program, mm-hmm. where can people find some of this stuff?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, my website is still under construction, but you can definitely hit me up on Instagram at The Modified Gentleman and also on Twitter at The Modified Gentleman. Well, I guess it's X.
Right.
At The Modified Gentleman.
And we'll make sure that when we post this, we have the links and everything to easily, so people can easily follow up with you. But you're like, I really like the overall idea of what you're doing in this modern world, because I do think, especially in the Black community, the young Black men, there's a lot that they have to overcome.
It is.
And it's just an unfortunate reality of just growing up as a Black man in this country. You already have just so many things that you're going to have to overcome. The ability, like you said, having positive male role models around you as a young man is so important, because we're impressionable. We easily give in to the peer pressure. I can't tell you how many people are in a situation right now, change their entire lives because they just simply didn't have boundaries, because they just simply didn't have the ability to, you know, recognize that this isn't for me and let me remove myself, and they get swept in with the negativity. Right. I think we got to highlight this content, this sort of conversation. Like, we need more of this for our folks in the community.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
And so folks can find you on Instagram, and like, I guess in working with you, like we talked about some of the different things that we covered, but like, what does that program entail over a period of time? If you don't mind just giving some folks a little bit of insight into the type of work that you can look forward to if you do happen to reach out.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So I can break it down into, like, I would say more targeted. So let's say someone is just struggling with, you know, some things dealing with husbandhood, or they're struggling with some things with fatherhood, or they want to get some more insight on manhood, then I can target that and say, hey, okay, let's pick what specific area you want to look at, and we can work on that. Or we can run through the whole thing. Now, I would recommend, and this is where I want to start implementing a little further down the line, I want to implement a father and son program where they can kind of go through it together. Now, as young as 16, I would say that. Because what we were talking about earlier, crossing that line between when a boy becomes a man, I like to look at that somewhere around the age of 16. And the reason why is because that's when you start taking on some real significant responsibilities. You can get your license, you can get a car, you can start working. You know, you got to start filing for taxes. Now you start moving into more of an adult role. And so, And so it should be better for you to start looking at, you know, the areas of masculine development, self-development, things like that. Start getting a foundation of your core principles, things like that. So, yeah, I can do targeted areas, or we can do the full program type of things. And I say it's somewhere around about three months.
Word. That's dope. So like a 3-month program. And and like it's like being in Burlington, but I know I've seen you a couple times in Durham. Shout out to Leon Impale Ford. Yeah. Shout out to y'all over there.
Yeah, I saw him today.
Like how widespread are you through North Carolina when it comes to doing this type of work? Being in Burlington, that's kind of a sweet spot between here and Greensboro. Like how widespread are you?
Yeah. For the most part at the moment, I usually go between Greensboro and Raleigh. But man, it depending on the type of engagement, man, I'll make it happen. You know, if somebody need me come speak, you know, at their Boys and Girls Club, just let me know. I'll make it happen.
Word.
Make time. Because eventually, that's the thing I want to do. I want to get out there and just create that community and talking to more people and getting them on board with that mindset. Yeah.
Nah, man, that's what we about here, too, is trying to create community of not even, say, like-minded folks, but just a community of if it's anything that's a common denominator, is the goal of being using your powers for good and not evil. It's like, we don't have to agree. We don't have to like the same things, but we should have common long-term goals as a community, right? We're all striving for better things that help, you know, everybody here on board. And I want to big up programs like this.
The thing is, the most important things about community, about having a community that's like-minded or at least parallel thinking, is the fact that you get so much more benefits when it's a group, because you find people, first of all, you yourself, you're going to always kind of be in the middle. And what I mean by in the middle is there's always going to be somebody that's coming to you, looking at you as a mentor. And then there's going to be somebody ahead of you that you're going to go to and you're going to look at them as a mentor. So you're going to kind of always be in the middle, you know, helping people and receiving help and things like that. But another big part about having a community is accountability, man. It's accountability. So you having a bad day, because you're not going to always have good days, and you start thinking, man, I don't know about this. Somebody can talk you off the ledge. And it's important to have that. And so again, when you go back to those three pillars of manhood, husbandhood, and fatherhood, you know, you might find some old heads that say that you might have to go to and be like, hey, I don't know how to deal with this. You know, can you help me? Have you done with it? Have you dealt with this? We need that type of brotherhood and camaraderie in our community. Mm-hmm. We need that. And it's going to be some young knuckleheads out there that you got to tell them, hey, y'all better stop that. Y'all better chill with that. Yeah. Don't do that.
Like y'all, you know? Young knuckleheads, you know, stealing my packages. Y'all better stop. Y'all better stop. Packages. Y'all better stop playing knock on my door, too. Hey, look, I used to play on doors, pause, but these little out here, man, they taking packages and they knocking on my door and running in weird times. And I don't like it. Y'all motherfuckers need to chill, man. Little need to chill. All right, man. I had to get that out.
For sure. For sure. Hey, I feel you, man. I feel you. But yeah, it's important, man. It's important for community.
No doubt.
I mean, I currently have my own personal community, man. I got a friend group, childhood friends that we grew up with. It's like 9 of us, man. And we in a WhatsApp group chat. And we sit there and we talk, man. We shoot. We talk about our kids' birthdays, you know, events coming up. We talk about issues. I had a friend of mine who was dealing with some marital issues. So he brought it to the group and, you know, we kind of talked about it, talked them off the ledge, and they're good to go. That was like 2 years ago, and the marriage is doing fine, you know? But the thing is, you got to have the right group. We could have been that group that would be like, let's go party. You know what I mean? Let's go hit this club.
Don't worry about it. Come out this way.
You feel me? Exactly. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
Let's not do that. You know what I mean? But that's what I'm saying. Like, if you want to build a community, you got to build one, you know, where it is like-minded individuals that are on the right path, you know? And so if one of you is having a bad day, it's okay to come to the group and be like, hey, you know, I know it's hard to ask for help, but it's there. It's there.
Yeah, that's those toxic individuals in the circle who will promote and try to, you know, encourage you to do something that they know is not necessarily like best for you long term. Like they just, that misery does love company, boy.
Yeah.
Word Facts. Up. So look, man, Larry, I appreciate the time. We've had quite a conversation here, just unpacking. Like, I think I'm gonna, when I go back and check out this episode, I'm gonna be looking for some stuff, because I want to continue having more conversations around just this idea of masculinity today, how that's defined, what that means to us as men. And so, you know, I look forward to maybe, you know, circling back in the future and expanding on a conversation. But I appreciate you joining. You've been so open, so gracious with your time. Is there anything out there for the listeners, the viewers? Is there anything that you hope folks are able to take away after just checking out today's episode?
Oh, yeah, man. It's the same thing I kind of tell everybody, man. Just never stop being your best self, man. Just continuously growing. And I know it sounds cliche. I know. It's actually real. If you put the work in, you'll get the benefits out of it, you know, being a better person. And again, learn your values, learn your standards, learn your boundaries, and learn your beliefs.
Yo, I like those four. What do you say? Is it values, standards?
Yeah. Values, standards, boundaries.
Values, standards, boundaries,
boundaries,
and beliefs.
And beliefs.
Yep. Y'all know what it is. This is the G. podcast where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future and everything else. Shout out to Larry for joining. This is some real positive masculinity. Make sure y'all hit that subscribe button. Tap in wherever you get your podcast. Looks like you got off course there, Jake. Stop that toxic shit, man.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how you feel.
I'm not taking no talk back. You see me blink yet? Ha.